Welcome, Lund Loyalists, to John Lund Unleashed. Those watching on YouTube, on the John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective channels. Viewers on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Lundos listening to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. John Lund Unleashed, brought to you by Reappell Sports Medicine. Got pain? Check out our revolutionary stem cell treatments. And guys, if low T is bringing you down, Reappell Sports Medicine can put you back in the game. Now all juiced up and ready to go, here's John.
What's happening? Thanks for joining us. It is a Thursday already? Thursday edition of the show, episode 163. As you can see on the chalkboard there, you can see on the NASCAR at the bottom, Bay Area Sports Collective, a pair of legs I'll tell you about in a minute. You can subscribe right there on the QR code right there. The Giants are on fire. That's seven in a row. Lucky seven for the Giants. The Dodgers keep pace. The Padres do not. So it's 28 losses for the Dodgers, 20 for the Giants. Hopefully we can do this for the entire rest of the season. Are the Giants for real, or are they just in Colorado? They have won seven in a row. They are Major League Baseball's hottest team. Good morning, good morning, good morning, John Lund and John Lund Unleashed. Thanks for joining us. Please make sure you are subscribed to the channel. We've had a nice bump lately. I don't know why. I don't know. I just have a team going. So anyway, thank you for subscribing. If you're new around here, thank you, thank you, thank you. All we ask for the trade of a fine show every single, 6 days a week, is that you subscribe to the channel. Please hit the like. That helps the algorithm. And if you would, please put those alerts on, because we put other stuff out throughout the day. That big B means Bay Area Sports Collective, if you would subscribe there as well. We are broadcasting on the Bay Area Sports Collective as well as John Lund Unleashed, which the Bay Area Sports Collective means a bunch of KMBR folk like me, Tom Tolbert, Rod Brooks, Polly Mack, and Creative Tony, all former KNBRers, plus Giants pitcher Jeremy Affelt and Amy G as well, all part of the Bay Area Sports Collective, and we are adding all the time. And you don't want to miss stuff, because I don't even know when everybody's on. Polly Mack and Creative Tony are back during the day after doing a night flight last night. Rod Brooks does night stuff. Tommy's kind of all over the board, depending on who will come into the backyard, so you got to get those alerts on the Bay Area Sports Collective. If you are watching, oh, hang on just a second. I forgot to go live on Instagram. If you're watching on Instagram, that is outstanding. At John Lund Radio, at John Lund Radio on X. If you're watching on X, I'm actually watching us on X right now. At John Lund Radio, hit your comments right underneath the show. If you're watching a little bit later, we're on a podcast as well, which we hit right after the show on your favorite places to get a podcast: Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, that's where we are. So a lot of different platforms to watch or listen on. Please consider coming over to John Lund Unleashed, subscribing, hitting the like button and the such. If you would do that, that would be outstanding. Do you want to say one thing before we get started? Because this is the fine sponsor of the show, and if you support him, I support you. It is my good friend, Dr. Jeffrey Reappell, right there in San Ramon. If you're in the East Bay, in the Bay Area, it's simple to get over to his office. If not, please consider coming over, because, again, I was talking to my wife this morning, actually, before the show, and she was sitting up in bed, and she was reading on her computer like she often does, getting ready to go over to her desk. And I said, how is the shoulder, by the way? How is the elbow and stuff? And she's like, it never felt better. And like I said, about a week ago, she had a updated quick procedure with the stem cell on the foot. She's feeling great there. She's had that done a couple of times, so she is feeling amazing. Dr. Reappell is one of the first in California to do stem cell. He's done it on professional athletes. I've told you that before. He is absolutely great and one of the best. So my wife, as a perfect example, shoulder, elbow, foot, she had all sorts of issues, and she's feeling great. And then I do low T, which I've done for years, puts you in a better mood, metabolism's faster, all the great things that you used to be, you are again. And all it is one quick blood test every 3-4 months. He does a quick procedure, man, and you are good to go, and you don't have to go in there every week for low T. So consider clicking on that QR code right there, and it'll take you straight to the website. And those aren't the only things that Dr. Reappell does. So if you check it out and he didn't hit that QR code, it's simply R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Dr. Jeffrey Reappell in San Ramon. And make sure you come on over, and please, 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 this is very important, tell him that I sent you over. So when you call, when you click, say, Lund sent me over, he treats you extremely well, but he'll even give you that much more if you tell him that we sent you over. So there you go. So good morning to everyone. By the way, man, I played that Grizzly Bear Waking up from a hibernation. That's what I look like this morning. I look like that damn thing. I wish I had it so I could play it for you again if you weren't here yesterday. But my God, man, I'm a little disheveled this morning. No drinking, no nothing. I stayed home. I was nice. I was good. I don't know what happened, why I look the way I do, but I do. That's just the normal day for me. But anyway, episode 163, Lucky 7. That's a giant 7 in a row. Adamus, Schmidt, Yaz, the guys that need to contribute were last night. We'll get into that. By the way, I didn't put this up there, but we'll talk about it. Patrick Bailey out for a while. We're going to learn something here, and I'll tell you about it. Are the Giants fans mean? Jackson Merrill and Mookie Betts seem to think so. I disagree. Steve Young speaks. Robert Saleh. By the way, Saleh did speak yesterday. I'm going to have to do this a little bit later. I got Bryce Huff instead. I was having some issues with my Saleh video this morning, so I do have some Bryce Huff for you, which is cool because we haven't heard from one of the newest 49ers. And I do have some things to talk about first impressions with him. I got a couple of Deebo Samuel pictures. Maybe they're fair, maybe they're not. I'll do that. NBA Finals. I was wrong about Oklahoma City sweeping the rest of this thing. 19 turnovers for Oklahoma City. You can't win NBA Finals games and do those kind of things. I got a couple of cabooses. You probably saw the DeMarcus Cousins thing. Wild. And Court Guy is pretty funny. And then we have random things, which we do throughout the show. If you are new around here, I don't control those things. I go out and say good morning to people. They're saying certain things. My ADD kicks in. And then we go off onto a tangent. We always get back onto the freeway, though. At least we try. Good morning to everyone. And again, I'm saying hello to the people in the chat room on YouTube. So if you jump over to YouTube, you can be like, oh, yeah, and you can hang out in the community with us. Harley Birdie is here this morning. John Joseph, good morning to you. Dom, our good friend Dom Peralta is here, everybody. Good morning. Good morning to you. Also, good morning to tons of people in here today. Enrique is here this morning. Shrimp Boy is here this morning. Catalina, I always say this about the lovely ladies. It is not a show without them. JJ Raider is here. The Nutter is here. Christian, good morning to you, Christian. It is a great day, Thursday. Kenny, hello. Definite big win last night, which we'll get into. Yeah, everybody's getting hyped on the Giants all of a sudden, man. Like I said, now 94 games, and they're still in this thing. So keep counting down. Don't be bringing no bots in here. What's going on with bots? Are we having bots problems? Joji is here this morning. Good to see you, my friend. Did I say JJ Rada? The 1420 is here. Antonio, good morning, good morning, good morning. Yeah, we will definitely hit that. I did not see Rod's show last night. Man, what a beautiful dog you got there. Yeah, we'll talk about that whole thing as well. And anyway, yeah, it's a little different there than in the NBA. So we shall discuss all of those things. Good morning to everybody. And thanks, no matter how you're watching, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, a couple of different channels, X, Instagram. Welcome, welcome, welcome. All right, let's get to things. Lucky number 7 for the Giants last night. They are the hottest team in baseball. Last night, another home run from Willy Adames, his longest in a long time. And we can say it's just Colorado. He's got home runs in two consecutive nights. But just like anything, and I believe this in life in general, is that, yeah, a lot of it's physical. There's no doubt. But sports is a mental game. And that's why nobody can put their arms, other than local people, around why Brock Purdy is so good, because his superpower is his mental game, his ability to decipher quickly, get the ball to the right receivers. It's like that does not compute. It's not 6'4", 225. It's not thrown through a brick wall. It's not, you know, these are things that you can see if you really watch and look, but people would rather look at, you know, in Brock's case, you know, a guy who's throwing it deeper or better or harder or is bigger, or a guy that's throwing 99 miles an hour versus a Greg Maddux, or, you know, a student of the game kind of a thing. So to me, Willy Adames is getting into a good headspace. Now, will he go back to Oracle Park and struggle? He has struggled, but I've told you this, and I'm sure it's changed now. I didn't look at his OPS, but before this series against Colorado, he had an OPS that was 100 points lower on the road. So Adames, yeah, okay, maybe some of it was mental from Oracle Park, and there's a reason why players won't sign here, but he wasn't even hitting well on the road. So I'll take what I can get from Willy Adames, and if he can carry this over to home games and other ballparks and everything else. So I'll put a little asterisk by his name, but I don't want to fully take credit away from Willy Adames. You're in Colorado. You hit the furthest ball you've hit yesterday in like 6 years. It's Colorado, but I'm not going to say 100%. Colorado's really bad. The air is thin, we know, but anything to give him confidence, because unlike last year where the Giants get rid of Jorge Soler, or they've gotten rid of, and you know, these are a lot of forehand moves where it was like, you know, they get rid of Mitch Haniger and they get rid of, you know, all these different Ross Stripling, all these bad signings that they had over the last couple of years of Farhan. By midseason, they're like, these are really bad signings. What happened was they were desperate. They signed these guys late in spring, and for the most part, they didn't work out. Now, Matt Chapman did, and they extended him, but he was a late spring signing. They were kind of scrambling at the last minute, and they were dumb signings. There's no question about it. So he undid a bunch of those things. As far as Adames is concerned, teams aren't going to look at a struggling shortstop who's got, what, a seven-year contract making like $170 million and say, yeah, let's sign up for that. You know, in the offseason, they would have. There was a lot of teams on him, and the Giants did a great job of saying, look, he's going to be our guy and being aggressive. But for now, he's going to be the Giants shortstop. There's no other choice in the matter. I said this yesterday. I think he's the most important offensive player that they have, and I don't think second is even close in terms of staying in this race from a hitting perspective. We went into this yesterday. The pitching, the superpower of the Giants is pitching. The superpower of the Dodgers is hitting. If you could combine those two things, oh my God. But the Giants pitching is as good as what the Dodgers hitting is, and both teams need what the other team has. So what can the Giants do about that? Well, yeah, they can. We talked about this over the last couple of days. Ryan Mountcastle's, some guy named O'Hearn, some guy named Jake Stowers, guys who were, you know, in Mountcastle's case, he's not a journeyman, but those last two are. And you'd be counting on those guys to come over and somehow continue to wave the magic wand that they've waved through, you know, nearly half the season. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. Maybe they will play back to their numbers. We did that yesterday. So could that help? Yeah, because first base has been terrible. And give Mike Yastrzemski credit. He was going like this on the roller coaster a lot of the year. Then he went like this, and then he's kind of even in and out again in the last couple of games. He's had a couple of huge hits, but it's not going to change my opinion. I like Mike Yastrzemski a lot, but he's a fourth outfielder, and I'd love to get a right fielder if I was the Giants, who was a little bit more consistent with the bat, because that's why the Giants go through these ebbs and flows, where they're getting two runs and three runs. Just a week ago, we're sitting there like, can this damn team score at all? They just went through this whole thing. Now they go to Colorado, they score 10, they win 6-5. They, you know, this is Colorado, and Colorado is terrible. This is what you should be doing to Colorado. There's a fine line between minimizing what the Giants are doing and being realistic about it. So guess what's coming after today's day game against the Giants? It's called reality. It's Dodger Blue. That's what's coming next. And what's going to be fun is if they can win this game and stay at 28 losses, then they're going to be right there with the Dodgers. Even if they can't, it's going to be a neck and neck race. And you got a 3-game series against the Dodgers coming up. And then you can say to yourself, okay, we're real or we're not, right? And we'll do bottom of the pint tomorrow night, I'm sure. But it's like, are we real? Colorado's kind of fantasy land. Want to give them credit. Want to give Willie Adames credit. Want to give Yaz credit. Want to give Casey Schmidt credit. I said this yesterday about Casey Schmidt. I'll say it again. He's got a runway here. And I'm sure Bob Melvin has sat down with him and said, look, man, I don't care if you strike out four times. I don't care if you make an error. I don't care. I don't care about any of those things. Matt Chapman is out. This is your job. Treat it like it's your job. So if you go 0 for 4 for 4 strikeouts, you're playing the next day. But he is. I mean, that's just how it is. Did you see the defensive play he made last night? I'd love to show it to you, but YouTube always makes me pull that stuff down. So I can't show it to you, but it was absolutely positively unbelievable. He's that good defensively. Please, dude, just like a Chapman stick. I mean, we don't need you to hit 300. If you could hit 230, 240, knock out 20, he's got the power to do it. Again, I think it's mental with him. He can hit. We've seen it in the minors. 20 home runs, 240. With that kind of defense, you're going to make a lot of money, young man. You can be a Matt Chapman type. But the Giants got to give him a little bit of a runway so he can gain confidence. Willie Adames got to gain some confidence. Because if somehow Casey Schmidt can get some confidence through this whole process, now you got yourself a guy who could play literally every position in the infield. I'm not talking about catcher. But he's great at third. He's great at short. He's good at second. He can learn first. Might be, you know, a fallback option if Bryce, I was going to say Bryce Huff, who we're going to hear from later. If Bryce Eldridge isn't all that, we'll see. So it's huge right now what's going on with the Giants. And I said this yesterday, they can compete with the Dodgers. Now, 10, 20 games from now, three games after this, I don't know. But as we sit here again with 94 games remaining, episode 163 on June 12th, Thursday, June 12th, 2025, the Giants are contenders. I don't care about 5 days, 10 days, 2 weeks, a month from now. I'm speaking right now with a daily show that goes 6 days a week, weekdays plus one, and sitting right here going, okay, the pitching's good enough. Robbie Ray was just okay, and the offense for once picks him up and scores 10 runs and comes back against the Rockies. They can do this, but it's a little bit of an illusion in Colorado. I'm not going to get ahead of myself, but so what? They did it. Adamas did hit that long home run. Mike Yastrzemski did have another key hit. Casey Schmidt did have a home run. Like they're playing. You got to give the guys credit, even though it's Colorado. So we'll put that in the back of our mind, but I'm not going to totally discredit what they're doing over the last couple of games. And if they can get the win, then they'll be tied in the loss column at worst with the Dodgers going into a big series in which you say, okay, there's 162 of these things. And we kind of, for a lot of them, right? It's not like the NFL where it's like every single Sunday or Monday or Thursday or whenever you play, it's a big deal. But there are 162, you go, really, Milwaukee on a Tuesday, really, Pittsburgh on a, you know, Monday. But coming up three against the Dodgers after this game, and they can't just throw this thing away, you sweep the Rockies. They suck ass. I mean, they suck. So sweeping the Rockies, that's what you should do. And then you go into a series against the Dodgers, and you say to yourself, I'll look up something real quick. And then you go into a series with the Dodgers, and you say to yourself, okay, it's a measuring stick. What are we doing? Who are we? Let me look at the map. You probably already know this, and I should have done this before the show, so I apologize. But what's the pitching matchups against the Dodgers? Let me just look at this real quick. The first game, you probably know this, Yamamoto versus Webb tomorrow night. Yamamoto versus Webb tomorrow night. Landon Roop versus what used to be Clayton Kershaw. And Kyle Harrison versus Dustin May. I haven't seen any May this year, so that's going to be interesting. I wish Harrison's not pitching great. I wish that was a different matchup. I wish that was like Birdsong in game three. So, you know, you got two young guys in Roop and Harrison. It's like, welcome to the big time, boys. We're in this race, and it needs to happen with those guys. So Roop and Harrison got to be great. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. But Logan Webb and Yamamoto tomorrow night? Are you friggin' serious with that? Come on. That is awesome tomorrow night. Yamamoto versus Logan Webb tomorrow night. My God, that is cool. So anyway, that's what's going on. Now, the downside to it is, and let's do a little Bailey talk. I don't have that up on the screen as something to talk about, but as you can see, the great Susan Slusser right there. Patrick Bailey's on IL, neck strain. Logan Porter comes up. He was with the Royals. We didn't feel like we were going to push it. Blah, blah, blah. When's Verlander back? My big thing right now, we'll get into Verlander later. When he's a little bit closer, we'll talk about Verlander because he is a key to be to the bottom of the part of the rotation. But this is what we're going to find out about Patrick Bailey. And to be honest with you, the timing is not great. I don't love the timing. I'm sure the Giants don't love the timing. The Giants love having Patrick Bailey in there. But we're going to see how important Patrick Bailey is, especially in this series against the Dodgers. He still strikes. There's no doubt about it. They don't have an ideal backup. Logan Porter is not going to make you forget Patrick Bailey, especially defensively. So they don't have great backup catchers. And look, why would you come to the Giants? You're not going to get a split or anything like that. You're not going to get every other day. You're going to get a day game after a night game. That's what you're going to get. You might get one start a week. You might sometimes get two starts a week, whatever. You're not going to get a lot of time. So guys who are maybe a little bit older would take that because they're like, oh, yeah, I'm 35, 36. I don't need more than a couple of days a week. But it would be nice, I think, if I was the Giants. Let me see if I can get an offensive kind of a stick and just see. But we'll see what the value is because he's great at framing. That's the number one thing. If they get robo umps, it's going to be interesting to see what his value goes to. He can throw runners out. He blocks balls really well. I mean, he's a complete defensive catcher. But there's been guys through the history of the game who are like 190 to 200 hitters, and they can't sustain because you just can't have a bat like that in your lineup every night. And Patrick Bailey is even worse than that. So I'm interested to see over the next few games, especially against the Dodgers, Does the pitching staff fall apart because Patrick Bailey's not there? Our team's going to test the catchers, no doubt. They're going to run on these catchers and see. So just how big of a loss is Patrick Bailey going to be? We'll see. We'll see defensively, because then we start looking at it going, okay, and I'm not just talking this year. Okay, can they have a 185 bat in the lineup? Especially in today's day and age, you don't have a pitcher where, you know, you got stick after stick after stick after stick. So, you know, a guy hitting a 185 with very little power. Is it that big of a deal? We'll find out in the Dodgers series. The framing, the throwing out, they're going to test him. There's no question in my mind that the Dodgers are like, okay, Patrick Bailey's out. Let's run and let's see what these backup catchers have. I think that's going to be, there's no doubt that that's going to be part of the Dodgers strategy in that series. So we'll see. We'll start seeing today against Colorado. How big of a deal is it? Because I'm not trying to minimize Patrick Bailey, but certainly the organization. And again, I'm not going to call this a silver lining because it's not. I'd much rather have Patrick Bailey in there. But the other side of it is, if they could get a little bit more offense from the catching position and get decent defense, is that better? Is that worse? You know, so over the next couple of days, it's going to be something to watch with Patrick Bailey out for just a little bit. So Adamas, Schmidt, Yaz, we'll get the Giants fans mean in just a second, and Lucky Seven. So before I get to Giants fans mean, which I completely disagree with, but we'll get to in a second. It's Fuji, everybody. Fuji, our good friend Fuji. Thank you. If you want to get your thoughts, questions, comments, thoughts on the show, 100% guaranteed, throwing a super up there or a sticker or something of that ilk would be greatly appreciated, because we're still paying for the Uber from the other day. Rockies can't hold the lead. Maybe the Rockies fan who got hit by a foul ball in a luxury box lawsuit has merit, reason for not paying attention to the game. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point had by Al. If you did not know that story, there was a high-end guy, and he had his back turned to the game and got hit in a luxury box and is suing the Rockies because of it. I'm always like, pay attention. Like, when I see people, this is before netting, and they're just staring at their phones, and you have these seats that are like, you know, depending on what team you're watching. If you're watching the Yankees or the Dodgers, probably $800 to $1,000. If you're watching the A's, maybe it's a couple hundred bucks, maybe even not that, in the minor league yard. But you used to see people like on a cell phone before they had the nets up, and you're like, oh, you got to pay attention, man. Yeah, they can't do it. The one thing that's, you know, what's crazy about them coming back the way that they have, Rockies starting pitching sucks. Rockies, for a Rockies team, offense sucks. It's all relative. For a Rockies team, this is not a good offense. Their bullpen has been their best asset. They have a couple of 2-3 guys at the end of their bullpen that are actually pretty good. They just haven't been good in this series. And they throw gas, but they haven't been good at all in this series. So anyway, all right, that's the Rockies. That's the Giants. I'm sure you saw this yesterday. This was on a Mookie Betts podcast. And he's got Jackson Merrill, the Padres. I don't know when they taped this whole thing, but they said that Giants fans are as mean as Yankee fans, and they put them 1-2 in some order in the league. And remember, Mookie Betts isn't out there anymore, but like, he'd stand out in right field and people would scream at him, right? And Jackson Merrill's obviously the center fielder for the Padres, and they think Giants fans are mean.
They're all like Little League gross, yeah, you know? You drive a Prius, your shoes untied. Yeah, whatever. I say San Fran got some mean people out there, though.
San Fran, they don't have care. Mean people out there, bro.
People say Wrigley and Yankee Stadium is bad. Bro, San Fran is like...
Well, that could be because the rivalry, because Yankee Stadium is bad.
From my perspective,
Yankee Stadium is probably...
Dude, San Fran's mean though.
San Fran.
They get in on you.
Yeah, both of them. Both of those guys. They're probably neck and neck.
Okay. So I think I can speak with a little bit of authority on this. I have been to old Yankee Stadium, new Yankee Stadium. I've been to Fenway. I have been to Wrigley. I've sat in the outfield in all of those places. Wrigley, because the bleacher bums are out there. And when Sammy Sosa used to be the right fielder of the Cubs, What you do is you go to like the Cubby Bear, and you go to Murphy's Bleachers, and you go to all the, and then when they're going to open up the gates, you run out there, and then you sprint to, because there's no assigned seating out there. So you go, and I've sat front row in right field when Sammy Sosa was the right fielder of the Cubs. And it was funny because the whole time it's just like, how, Sammy, you're so great. And they're bowing to him this whole time. And then they were playing the Padres. And I don't know why I remember this, but former Cardinal and a number of different teams, John Mabry was the right fielder. and they were just giving him the business. I mean, the business. And he was doing one of those, you know, flipping the finger behind his hat and everything. But it just kind of has a, you know, just kind of a, at the end of the game, it was just kind of funny, right? It was just, they were just having fun. It wasn't anything nasty. Now, you go to, I've never been to a Yankees Red Sox game, and that's what Mookie Betts is talking about. Betts is talking about playing right field for the Red Sox against the Yankees. Nasty. I mean, I bet it was nasty. I went to an Orioles game, and the Orioles sucked, and the Yankees, and I can't remember who the right fielder was, but the Yankees were just giving him the business. I mean, giving him the business. And again, and then Aaron Judge would come out there, kind of a similar situation to Chicago with Sammy Sosa, and it was just the whole time, you know, Aaron Judge and Chance and how great he is, and he's waving to the fans. And then, you know, so again, you're talking about Aaron Judge, then the opposition right fielder. Sammy Sosa, then the opposition right fielder. Crazy. I sat in the outfield at Fenway Park just above the bullpens there, and they're giving everybody the business. Again, I've been there a couple of different times, never against the Yankees. They're giving them the business, just anybody they're giving the business. But as far as Mookie Betts, you're wearing Dodger blue. So, yeah, you're going to get the business. There's no question. Now, in terms of the ballparks I've been to, like to me, the East Coast and the Midwest are on a different level, just on a different level. And it's not maybe what they're saying about San Francisco is because I've seen this and I've been out there plenty of times, tons of Giants games. I'm sure just like you, I don't really hear a lot. I mean, you hear a lot of grief and he was saying, you know, you drive a Prius. That's back to like Hunter Pence. But again, remember when Hunter Pence was playing right field for the Giants, it was just all love. And then if Mookie Betts comes out there, of course you're going to get a bunch of grief. It just are. But I don't believe that we are as nasty. I think there's the difference is we might be on our phones on like Wikipedia or looking something like that. And we may take a shot. We may say something about your mom or something. And so that's why they probably think we're extra mean because we'll actually look it up. Like we'll look stuff up and try to be pretty smart. Whereas in New York or Boston, or again, this is just my viewpoint. I could be 100% wrong. It's just drunk profanity. At Fenway Park, at Yankee Stadium, at Wrigley Field, it's drunk profanity. People aren't getting out their phones and going, err. Whereas in San Francisco, like, people are pulling their phones out going, how can I get to this guy? So to me, it's just different. Mookie Betts, I understand it because, again, you play for the Dodgers. We don't like you. So if you're saying it's Yankees, Red Sox, yeah, they're just going to give you grief because you're a Dodger. Jackson Merrill, A, this is his second year in the league, and B, do we give venom to the Padres? I mean, they're relevant now, but they sure as hell aren't the Dodgers. So I don't know what Jackson Merrill's talking about. And I heard that they said San Fran. I understand that. Everybody gets pissed off about San Fran. I would think that the word's gotten around. But again, if they hate us, then they're going to say that just to piss us off a little bit more. And here's the other thing that, look, Mookie Betts is old enough to know this. Like, if you come out and you cry about us, oh, they're so mean in San Fran. They said it. That's not, I'm saying it because they said that word. I don't say that. I don't use that term. But if they're bitching and crying like that, you're just going to get more. You're just going to get more grief. Like, I don't know that it can change for Mookie Betts. I mean, Mookie Betts plays infield now, so he's not getting near as much. But, like, the next time Jackson Merrill jogs out to center field for the Padres, he's just going to get the business. I mean, even worse than he was, it's like, okay, all right. Here it goes, and you're just gonna get the business. So we'll see. I don't buy it. I mean, look, they're out there. They know Mookie Betts is a Dodger. I get it. But Jackson Merrill, yeah, you're in the same division. Yeah, you're as relevant as you've been in a number of years, and you've become a rival. You aren't like a Dodger type of a rival. And I'll be honest, I have not been in the outfield for a Padres game, so I could be 100% wrong. Maybe you are. I've sat in the left field bleachers at Oracle Park plenty. I've been out to the right field. I've obviously walked the yard and you're out there for a long time having a beer, talking to people, whatever. I don't hear it as nasty as what they're talking about. And I've probably been to both covering and as a fan, probably 100 Giants games. And I don't hear any of it. I just, like I said, am I saying it doesn't exist? No, I'm not saying that. I've heard stuff, but nothing like games I've seen on the East Coast, the Midwest. Tigers games I've been to, nasty. Cubs games I've been to, drunk nasty. Red Sox games I've been to, drunk profanity. Yankees games I've been to, drunk profanity. That's what it is. And I'm not saying that the Giants games, there isn't drunk profanity. There's plenty of it. I'm just saying that it's not nearly as nasty as what I've seen from Yankees, Red Sox, Tigers, Cubs games. But they're there. I'm not. So we'll see. But I'm skeptical. Let's get some thoughts there. Maybe back in the Candlestick days, this would have merit. Oh, I like what you did there. Remember when Reggie Smith went in the stands? Yeah, that's true. That was a little bit different. Yeah, Candlestick is different, though. Don't you get the sense that, just to a certain extent, a fan that goes to Oracle Park and a fan that went to Candlestick and braved all that stuff was a little different? But I could be wrong. Could be totally wrong. Let's see. I would agree with you 100%. That is not something we say. But that it just seems to happen all the time with people. And then we get even more pissed off, because I guarantee you the next time either of those guys are in the outfield, that's not going to be very good. Love to get your thoughts on it, though. I don't think we're that nasty. I just don't. I just don't think we're that nasty. By the way, people are bringing this up. I've been to plenty of Dodger games. I'm from Southern California. I don't mean Angels games, because people are just kind of like, whatever there. It's like, I meant to go to Disneyland and I took a wrong right turn. Dodger games could get nasty. There's just no question. As far as Bailey is concerned, I think you bring up a good point, Jen. Not a bad thing for Bailey to get some midseason rest. Yeah, that's. I almost feel like that way with like Steph Curry sometimes. Like, he'll be out and like tweaks an ankle. It's like, take five games off. It's okay. It's fine. But yeah, I am. I'm interested to see what happens with the Giants without Patrick Bailey. We'll see. What else do we have? Okay, there you go. But anyway, yeah, two things against them. Never call out a fan base, because it's going to be worse. And please don't say San Fran, but they'll probably say it. And they're probably saying it, because especially in Mookie Betts' case, he knows better. He's just saying it. He's just saying it to be pissy. So there you go. It is episode 163. Thanks for joining us. Lucky seven. That's seven in a row for the Giants. Adames, home run last night. Casey Schmidt, home run. Yaz, another big hit. Are the Giants fans mean? That's where we are as far as the Giants are concerned. And again, day baseball against the Rockies, and then a three-game set, including tomorrow night's pitching matchup between Logan Webb and Mr. Yamamoto. So that is going to be an awesome pitching matchup tomorrow night. So that's what's going on as far as the Giants are concerned. If you have questions, comments, or thoughts, hit me up with a super, and we can talk about it, or hit me up underneath with your questions, comments, thoughts, or you can even hit me up at John Lund Radio on X, and we can discuss more about the Giants. All right, as far as Steve Young is concerned, let me play a cut. So from the Niners today, or Niners discussion, we got a little Steve Young. I put Robert Saleh there, but he was having some Robert Saleh issues with my video. So I do have some Bryce Huff for you, which I think is even better. I'd like to get to know Bryce Huff, one of the newest 49ers. But here is Steve Young. He's on the Rich Eisen show. If you can get past the bad background that he has, and again, here I am sitting in like an insane asylum behind me as we're doing some redo in the studio here. So maybe I don't have any room to talk. But he's got one of those virtual backgrounds where you like pop in and out of it, and which I'm not a big fan of, but that shouldn't matter. It's what Steve says. So here is Steve Young yesterday on the Rich Eisen show with a number of different 49ers discussion points, including why he likes what they did this offseason.
It was a plan that was retooling. It wasn't a complete restructure, but it was retooling. And making every move was tactical and smart and fast, and then signing everybody and getting everybody on board. I just thought they handled the offseason perfectly. And now, you know, they're in that space where they're no longer going to come out of the locker room with the best, you know, roster in football, which they've done for 5 or 6 years. And with the best locker room, they got along, that bought for each other, that had their back. That's why they were in Super Bowls in the last few years. Now, they didn't win them. I get it. But they're there because of that group of people. Well, that's different now. And so I'm getting back to Brock in a second, but what they did in the offseason was really smart. And now what has to happen is your veterans need to stay healthy. Trent Williams, number one. Like, if Trent Williams goes down, that offensive line is not the offensive, that's not a offensive line that's, you know, top five in the league. But with Trent, you can survive it. Now, if the veterans stay healthy, and now you got all your rookies that need to pop. And that's what's happened. The Rams got it with Puka. They got different people to pop. And now all of a sudden they're back in the mix. And that needs to happen. So for specifically for Brock, he's a guy that his superpower, like Aaron Rodgers, but not learning in his more sophisticated era, is processing. So Brock, when he's thriving, you saw it a couple of years ago, incredible talent that can get open quickly. And I can process through it and get to that guy like nothing. All of a sudden last year, those guys got hurt. They weren't open right away. And now I need to extend the play. And now things start to go haywire because I don't have Like he always tells you, I'm not the biggest, I'm not the fastest, I'm the strongest. So then like my game is really about processing and you getting open quickly and getting a little protection and moving and getting the ball out. So if that happens and we get that movement, that kind of speed and attack on defenses that are tight, like the time is right, like it's in and out, then he's going to be dangerous. But if it goes like last year, people are hurt, that's not happening, protection starts to break down, I got to start running around, ball starts to fly, all of a sudden there's interceptions, you know, that's a tougher spot. And so there's a lot of the guardrails are wider for the 49ers this year. Like it's different, but yet.
Sorry, just wanted to cut in there on Steve. So there's a number of different things, and always all roads lead back to Brock, especially when it's Steve Young. All roads kind of lead back to Brock. But let me get into a couple of things he said first at the beginning, because it's interesting how the offseason went, which is we all got mad, and I got a little bit of some Debo photos to show, but we got mad when they lost all those guys, and then we kind of understood, and then we thought that well, it was because of Brock Purdy, but we found out that they could sign Kittle, Warner, and Purdy and still have like $40 million. They have the second most cap space right now in the league. I don't know how it works. You don't know how it works. It's fluid. That's all I know. And you can sign guys, and they could still sign guys. And they had enough money to and we're going to hear from Bryce Huff in a second, to get Bryce Huff from the Eagles, pay a third down specialist, because that's what he is, $7.95 million at least on the cap, which is a fair amount of money for a guy who hopefully can get double-digit sacks again. But they've got money, and if there was another player that popped out on the screen, and I'm not saying it's like a Shamar Stewart, which I don't know if you followed that whole thing. Shamar Stewart, I think, was a 17th overall pick by Cincinnati. He was a guy that a lot of people thought the Niners might pick. He has all these unbelievable traits. He's a defensive lineman, really never put it together at Texas A&M and needs all the reps he can get. And because of the contract language with the Bengals, is still not signed, and so he's there, but he's not playing on the field, and it's this complete mess. Anyway, like if the Niners wanted to say, hey, we could add that guy, or if the Niners wanted to say we could add a safety or a corner, that's why Jair Alexander, which doesn't make any sense, why people keep bringing up the Niners and putting them at the top of the board as far as players are concerned. I saw dumb odds again, which are so stupid. Like TJ Watt, I think, had the second highest odds to go to the 49ers. It's like, really? They just traded for Bryce Huff. Like what? Who wouldn't love to have that guy? But they don't have that kind of money. So look, it's all relative and it's all fluid and all those kind of things as far as the cap are concerned. So they can still do some things, but what I want to go back to as far as Steve goes is all of a sudden here we are saying that the 49ers had a good offseason. Steve Young is saying it's a good offseason, that they're not going to walk in to buildings as the 49ers. And it's almost, there's a little bit of a parallel with the Warriors. Now the Warriors won championships. It's different. But for a long time, it was like the Niners would walk into a stadium and that team was kind of half beat. Like, oh my God, look at all these guys walking into the stadium. We don't have a chance against these guys, and the 49ers would roll them. And now teams are looking at it going, wait a minute, Trent Williams is a little older, Kittle's a little older. You know, they were 6-11 last year. You know, maybe this isn't the team that it was. And I think what Steve is saying here is that they're going to walk into a building and teams are going to think, hey, we got a shot against these guys. Now, I think that's great, because if your antennas are fully up, which they always have been for the 49ers, then you're always going to get some team's best game. And for the Warriors, as long as Steph Curry's around, as long as Draymond Green's around, no matter what the Warriors' record is, teams are going to look at the Warriors as a measuring stick. Whether they're a measuring stick or not at this point, I don't think they are, but teams are going to look at them like that. If somebody lets their guard down against the 49ers, especially given the 49ers' schedule this upcoming year, they could win 12, 13 games and potentially be the number one seed. I'm not saying they're going to be that, but I also don't think the national narrative of them not being very good this year is accurate at all. I think they're going to be really good. So what Steve is saying essentially is they've got to work harder. They've got to be more intricate. They can't make the mistakes maybe that they've made. They can't be so loose, you know, all that kind of stuff. So he's saying, yeah, okay, they had a really good season. Then he gets on to Brock, and, you know, there's nothing really new in what he says there, but I guess the thing that I always laugh about is because what he's saying essentially here is, A, his superpowers are mental, which we know, and he said if players stay healthy on the 49ers offense, basically they'll score points, and we know that too. And I think one of the narratives from last year, and people look at it as excuses, I understand that, but they'll give Patrick Mahomes or some of the better quarterbacks an excuse if they have injuries. They will not with Brock on a national level. They just point at Brock and say, well, he's not good anymore. It's not that Christian McCaffrey wasn't around. It wasn't that Debo Samuel stunk for most of the season. It wasn't that Ayuk was hurt. It wasn't, you know, it's none of those things. It wasn't that the offensive line had a ton of push into Brock Purdy. It was all these things. Oh, he was picked 262 and guy's not very big and his arm's not very strong. And I'll continue to say this until we see in the season, and that will be when the rubber hits the road. But to me, it's he just tried to do too much because he didn't have the weapons around him because the offensive line wasn't very good. And he thought to himself, okay, I got to try to be Superman here. I got to play some hero ball. That's not ever going to be Brock Purdy. So if you expect hero ball, he's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Josh Allen. Those guys can play hero ball. Brock Purdy cannot. He plays within a system. A system quarterback is not a bad thing because you execute things in a certain way. So while people have this narrative that being a system quarterback is a negative thing, I look at it as a positive thing. Most people look at the word potential and say that's positive. It's actually negative. It means you haven't reached it. Being a system quarterback means you're running the offensive system. Every quarterback in the NFL is a system quarterback because they're running a specific system. And if you run it well, then they say, well, geez, you're just a system quarterback. Okay. I've told you this many times and you know it. There's nothing easy about playing quarterback in the NFL. I didn't need to go through it of 300-pound men trying to rip your face off, 2.1 seconds to throw the ball. You've got four or five receivers in the route. You've got to read them all telepathically at the same time while someone's trying to rip your face off. There's nothing easy about that. So if you're being called a system quarterback, it just means the people that are not smart enough to realize how good you are or what you do and how you do it just fall back on a lazy narrative of you're a system quarterback, which means you're running Kyle Shanahan's offense because most teams are, and you're running it at a high level. So then you're a system quarterback. Okay. That's actually a positive thing. That's actually good. That means if I'm a system quarterback, the system must be working because they don't call bad quarterbacks system quarterbacks. Like, do you ever remember Trey Lance being called a system quarterback? Do you ever remember, you know, look at the worst quarterbacks in the league. Are they system quarterbacks? No, because they're not running the system well. They just flat out suck. You staying with me on that? All right. Let me flip over. So that's the offensive side of the ball. I wanted to play Salah for you, but I was having some issues. I wanted to get on the air. I could have messed with it a little bit longer, but we're not doing that anymore. We're going to be on time from now on. So I did have some Bryce Huff for you, and I want to play that because, to be honest, I've never spoken to Bryce Huff. I don't know if he's a funny guy, a gregarious guy, a serious guy, whatever the case may be. So I wanted to play a little Bryce Huff for you, and then we'll analyze. But here's a few minutes of him from the podium yesterday. First time he's spoken to the local media.
First season with Coach Salah, and how intense the practices were, and just how the entire group was just bought in. So it was easy for me to just, like, get better because everybody around me was getting better, just iron sharpens iron type of thing. And I just remember the grind. Like, it was a hot summer, hot camp, and it kind of pushed everybody on that D-line to get better and grow as a whole. So I was able to just learn from all the guys I was in that room with and just work hard and be able to put myself in the best position to take advantage of my opportunity.
Bryce, getting off the ball.
So walking or talking yesterday, working together, what have the conversations been like with him?
It's been cool, you know, because he's had a lot of success in his league, been a great player in his league for a long time. So just being able to hear what he has to say about certain things within pass rush or within the scheme has just been really cool, being able to chop it up with him every day. And yeah, I'm looking forward to working with him this year.
Bryce, getting off the ball is kind of your calling card. I mean, how did you develop that? Who helped you develop that skill?
I've always been a twitchy player, but I feel like it really came alive when I started working with Jarnard Avery back in Memphis. He ended up getting drafted to the Browns, but just working with him during that time, I was able to see how he moved, having a similar body type to myself. And I just kind of always took that with me, like once he graduated and everything from Memphis. And then I feel like working with Coach Nicolini when he was in New York and that whole staff, they got my body, like he said, put on a bunch of muscle, extremely explosive. And just I was able to really like bring my twitch alive and my get off alive.
All right, so it's not that he said anything there, that's Bryce Huff, yesterday with the media down at 49ers HQ and the final OTAs before training camp. It's not that he said anything earth-shattering there. He did talk a little bit more about Robert Saleh and how he's happy to be in the system, and he's just going to pin his ears back and go. If you didn't hear the question, there was a question there. I think it was Tracy Sandler asked him about working with Nick Bosa and what's that meant. That was Krug at the end asking him about his get off. Where did he get the get off? So there wasn't anything necessarily that was earth shattering there. I just wanted to kind of get to know his demeanor a little bit. And he seems like a real serious guy. Maybe that's just because he's new around here and we'll get more personality out of him as we go. But I really don't have any issue with it. I just kind of thought it was interesting. But the one thing that I think is going to be fun here is, and maybe the number one thing I'm going to be watching once they put on the pads in camp, is because if you look at his numbers, he's just not good at sealing the edge. He's not a run guy. He's just a pin his ears back, wide nine, take a run at the quarterback, straight vision, just get to the QB. And, you know, it just seems like he's kind of got that kind of mentality when you hear from him. But Mikel Williams on the outside moves to the inside on third down, Nick Bosa opposite him, and they get after the quarterback, and hopefully they can make others around him better. And then I'll get some Robert Saleh for you. I'll get that all straightened out. I will make sure that you have your alerts on, and I'll play some Robert Saleh and do some shorts today with some of the Robert Saleh sound a little bit later, because like I said, I wanted to be on time. So I played some Bryce Huff for you instead. But I've been through it, and he does talk about the young guys on the inside and how he's feeling. But bottom line is that's the pass rush side. The big rookies on the inside have got to push that pocket from the inside and allow these guys to get to the quarterback, because those guys got to stop the run. They've got to protect Nick Martin, who's super fast. But like I said, I've seen the guy in person. He's just not very big. But that's kind of where the position is going. There's a star position, and he's kind of that size, about 5'11", 220. And so I'm not saying he's going to play safety, but you want that movement out of your linebacker. So, and he was injured a lot last year at Oklahoma State. So they really like him, but it's got to be those big guys keeping him off. And then, of course, we'll talk more about the secondary as we get closer to training camp. So that's what's going on as far as the 49ers are concerned. Now, look, I want to be fair to Debo here, because when I was talking about offseason, Steve Young speaks, and Steve liked the offseason, and initially we were kind of pissy about what the 49ers did. How could you trade Debo? How could you let Hufanga go? How could you let Hargrave go? Players who the 49ers believes best football is behind them, and they are often injured, and the 49ers don't want to be in that business. It's football, so they're going to be in the business to a certain extent, but they want to try to minimize it as much as they possibly can. Now, maybe Debo Samuel is going to go out and have a great season, and I'll come back and I'll do the show and I'll say, Debo's had a great season. I was wrong. When Debo has been great as a 49er, when Debo has been great as a 49er, by the way, let me click on Perry real quick just to answer a question very quickly. I have live chat, not seeing any posts. You either could be on John Lund Unleashed. There's a lot more people in that chat room, so you might want to come over here if you're in the Bay Area Sports Collective, or there's probably a button that you don't have pushed at the top there, which should enable your live chat. So it's one of those two things, by the way. If you're over at Bay Area Sports Collective, not as many people are chatting over there. It's mostly on John Lund Unleashed. If you'd flip over here, you'll see a lot of people. So anyway, just letting you know. All right, as far as Debo is concerned, when Debo's great, Debo's in shape. Now, maybe Debo is in shape. And look, he was drafted 5'11", 215. I don't know what he weighs. He hasn't gotten any taller, but he's built like a running back. So I'm not sure. Maybe that's a bad angle. He's got some serious guns going on. I wouldn't want to see Debo in an alley. I mean, he looks badass there, but he's big. I mean, Debo's big. And if that was Debo in a 49ers uniform, I would be concerned. He's probably too big there. Now, I don't know how much running back he's going to play. Maybe they asked him to bulk up. I don't know. Let me give you a different angle, because, you know, here am I, one to speak. His legs have always been big like that. But I'm more concerned about the midsection as we all get older. And again, he's not even 30 years old. That Debo looks big there. And I could be 100% wrong. But he looks big there. And when Debo is effective, Debo's a little bit lighter than that. And if he was in a 49ers uniform and that was OTAs and those pictures were taken and he was a 49er, we would be talking about it. I mean, that's just what it is. So we'll see. I'm not hoping that Debo's not good. I don't mind Debo. I've told you some stories about interacting with him both in the locker room and at the Super Bowl on Radio Row a couple of times. He can be, let me be as nice as I can, he can be moody. He can be surly. He can be, you know, one minute he's smiling and he's funny. He can be unpredictable. And then the next minute, you just don't know. So I've told those stories on the show before. I'm not anti-Debo in any way, shape, or form. He gets traded. I'm not one of those guys like, I hope he doesn't have success. I hope he does great in Washington. My prediction is he gets hurt because of the physical way he plays as he gets older. Everyone's all excited that, you know, in Washington, oh, my God, we got that guy. And they're going to sign McLaurin at some point. And boy, what is it? Well, he was traded for a fifth-round pick. So the rest of the league looks at it and says, we're not so sure that Debo is going to be that effective anymore. He certainly wasn't last year. He has never run great routes. He's a guy that you want to get him the ball in open field. We've seen it a million times, and he's a yak rack monster if you get him in the right situation. And one of the reasons why the last couple of years he struggled is people saw, especially in the Super Bowl against Kansas City a couple of years ago, guy can't get open against man coverage. He kind of has lost a little bit of the spark and the burst because of the ways that he's done things. He played a lot of running back. Running backs get hurt. They lose a little bit of their spark, and all of a sudden they're out of the league. I'm not saying that's the case with Debo, but I am saying that when Debo is in shape, he's much more effective than when Debo is heavy. And again, he's not Pablo. I'm not saying that, but it's a similar kind of a thing where when he's in shape, man, he can just knock it out of the park. When he's not, his belt breaks and Red Sox fans rip him. So we'll see. He looks really big there. His arms look massive. He does not look like a wide receiver. He looks like he's playing running back for Washington. So anyway, we'll see. Like I said, I'm not wishing him ill will, but he looks really big there. And normally when Debo looks really big, that doesn't mean a great season. So we'll see. We'll see what goes on with Debo, but he looks big. He looks very big. All right, as far as the NBA Finals are concerned, the Thunder did it to themselves last night. 19 turnovers of their team that was one of the better teams in the league, around 11 turnovers a game. So I'm not saying that was the number one reason they lost, but it certainly isn't helping things. So they had 19 turnovers last night. They lose. I was wrong. I thought that Oklahoma City was going to win the rest of the way. I thought that the Pacers got back into that first game. Oklahoma City in the fourth quarter at a 15-point lead in game one. They pissed it away. They're a young team. They're like, we got these guys. Tyrese Halliburton comes back, hits that big shot, and they get a game one victory. And I thought, you know what? The Thunder learned their lesson. They're going to come back, and they're going to beat these guys. They still haven't. They committed a lot of turnovers. That's just laziness, not being focused. And give the Pacers a lot of credit. Plus, there was a ton of buzz in the building. That was the first time that there was an NBA Finals game in Indianapolis for 25 years. And obviously, Indiana is a hotbed for basketball. People were going absolutely bonkers. And you had guys in the building like Reggie Miller. And just like, you know, there was a lot of energy in that building. And the Pacers fed off of it. Now, will Oklahoma City say, okay, we're adjusting to that? We'll see. But I'll tell you this. If the Pacers somehow can win the next game and they go up 3-1, that's where the youth of Oklahoma City jumps in. I think Oklahoma City is clearly the better team, but it doesn't mean they're going to win the series. This next game, they've gone from, I thought, well, after game one, I thought they'd win the rest of them, especially after the game two performance. This becomes not must win, because we all know that must win is must win. And when you don't have must win, it's not must win. Does that make sense? When people say that in a 2-1 series that it's a must win game, it's not, because they're going to play another game regardless. It's critical. It's important. You'd like to win it. Whatever term you like to use in those kind of situations other than must win, which people do inaccurately do, that's what it is for Oklahoma City. It's very important for them to win the series. And like I said, if they get that championship swag in the Western Conference, I think it's going to be a problem for the Warriors, for whomever else. If the Spurs get Kevin Durant, whatever the case, if Houston gets somebody, whatever. They get the championship swag, look out. I think Oklahoma City could be on the verge of something, but they've got to win one first. And Indiana sitting there going, hey, man, we got a game at home. If we go up 3-1 on these guys are really good, but they're really young. And you're putting their backs against the wall without having won a championship. You can do that with the Warriors. They're down 3-1. They're cool. They're not going to freak out. They've done it before, been here, done that. Oklahoma City has not. They have not been here, done that. So when you go down 3-1 in the NBA Finals, we'll see what they do. But this becomes a huge game. So that's what's going on as far as the Finals are concerned. By the way, as far as ratings, I said this at the beginning of the Finals. Okay, they're not good. So what? One of the most confusing things to me in all of sports is that when people, like soccer fans, for example, beg for, you got to watch it, you got to watch it. What do I care? Like, if I'm a certain fan of a certain sport, hockey's this way, soccer's this way, oh, you really got to watch. Okay, don't. Like, it's just like a, you know, there's a certain show on, right? We are just inundated with shows all the time. Apple TV and Netflix and Paramount and whatever it is that you watch, right? Amazon, whatever these, all these other channels, there's stuff coming out all the time that is awesome. And if a friend of mine asks, I'll tell him, hey, I like this show or that show or whatever, the new John Hamm thing, what is it, Friends and Neighbors or whatever, highly recommend. But, you know, if you don't want to watch it, it doesn't piss me off. Like, how could you not watch Friends and Neighbors or whatever it's called with John Hamm? It's awesome. Not a John Hamm guy. Cool. But for some reason, when it comes to sports, like, we get pissed. Like, they're making such a big deal that nobody's watching it. Who cares? Like, I'm not a TV executive. I don't care if anybody's watching Oklahoma City, Indiana. I think it's entertaining. I think it's interesting. It's the NBA Finals. Now I'm different. You're probably different. You're watching this show. But I'm not, you know, I'm just like, whatever. If I'm a hockey fan and I like watching the Stanley Cup Finals, I'm not going to beg you to watch. If I'm a soccer fan, I'm not going to beg you to watch. If I'm a WNBA fan, I'm not going to beg you to watch. Like, it's like, whatever, man, you do you. And for some reason, certain sports fans get pissed off that you're not watching their sport. You can watch that John Hamm show or not. You can watch, you know, there's all sorts of great stuff out right now. Maybe it's for you. Maybe it's not, you know, whatever. Like, I've talked to people in my life who didn't watch Sopranos. I think it's one of the best, series of all time. But I'm not going to beg you. Oh, you got to. Oh, man, you got to watch Breaking Bad. What are you, insane? You never watched it? What are you, stupid? Like, I don't care. Watch what you want. Watch sports. Watch shows. Watch movies. Watch the, like, yeah, you got to see this movie. Oh, you didn't watch it? Oh, what's wrong with you? I don't care. Like, whatever. Do whatever you want. All right, so there's NBA Finals. I've really been sandbagging the entire show to get to the Sweet Clean family-friendly Caboose Pistol. We got two things here. One was actually because I was watching all this DeMarcus Cousins stuff, then, like you said, a video comes on after the video, and you're like, what is this? So anyway, so I have two Sweet Clean family-friendly Caboose Pistols. So before I play those, let me make sure sports-wise that we're clear here. To make sure we don't have any new supers or anything like that, so they don't have to double back on this stuff. Look at everybody's having a great conversation today. Love it. By the way, just want to make sure that you know you're watching John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. Oh, you're not? You're watching on X or Instagram? That is fine as well. No issue whatsoever. If you migrate over here, that would be great. Please give us a like. Make sure that you have those alerts on, because I do have some Robert Salas video that I want to play for you a little bit later on today. So if you would... make sure that you have those alerts on. Hit us with the like and subscribe to John Lund Unleashed, as well as you see that B, the Bay Area Sports Collective. Also, support my good friend. You see that pair of legs there. That is Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E. He's done the stem cell on my wife. Absolutely phenomenal. I'm not lying. She feels absolutely great. Elbow, shoulder. She just had another procedure on her foot the other day. She's feeling great. I do the low T. I've done that for years, but with Dr. Riopelle, it's just every few months. You do a quick blood test, and then you do a quick procedure, and you're done. You don't have to do it weekly. It's awesome. I'm telling you, it's life-changing. It has been for me. So check out Dr. Riopelle, and he does all sorts of other procedures and things to make you look good, feel good, men, women, whatever. It's not just the things I talk about. So if you go and you look it up, Riopelle is R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle, and he is a fine sponsor of the show. So if you would not only check it out, but also tell him that I sent you over, that would be outstanding. He is a fine sponsor of the program. All right, without further ado, let's do this thing. Let's do a little bit of Sweet Clean family-friendly Caboose Pistol. I got two of them for you today.
John Lund Unleashed presents the Caboose Pistol.
Wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Somehow, someway, Lundo thinks this is the best way to leave a final impression on you for the day.
Yo, Caboose Pistol, everybody has one.
Did you say Caboose Pistol?
I know some women who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah.
Leave me out of this, you weirdo. Here's John.
It's nice to see you, by the way. Very nice. Joy's meeting a friend for coffee. It's nice to see you. Like I said, it's not a show without you, so we made sure that we had to pop in. Let's do this. Should we just DeMarcus Cousins first? So what is this, in the Dominican, right? Or where is this? Puerto Rico, Dominican? Where is this? But anyway, maybe you saw this. This is crazy. So let me just preface this, because I'll play this a couple of times so you can catch everything. But in other basketball leagues, I've talked to a number of different people who have played overseas. It's nasty. The conditions aren't always great fans are on you. They don't have the security like they do in the NBA. A lot of things are said. Racist things are said. Players are subject to profanity, to all sorts of physical and a lot of mental abuse. And we all know DeMarcus Cousins. He is known to have a short fuse. So this guy's flipping him off, using profanity, and DeMarcus decides to go to the crotchal region and then try to rub that in the guy's face, and people go crazy. So anyway, I'm going to play a couple of different clips for you. So this is the incident. I guess he's been suspended now. So here is DeMarcus Cousins' interaction with the fan. I'm going to bring this back for you, but a couple of things here. The guy's double burdened him. He's obviously using profanity. He's in the opposing team's gym. I don't know where security is. Like in the NBA, there'd be 10 security guys there in about 2 seconds. There's very low security. It's like it's the players like sitting the guy down to go, bro, like sit back down. The other thing is, and I've told you this on many occasions, the players may not look big on TV. I mean, Steph Curry's 6'3". He's not a small man, but he looks small. DeMarcus Cousins is a massive dude. So I don't know what this dude is doing. Obviously, he's drunk. So let me just play this one more time. Anyway, you get the idea. We know DeMarcus Cousins. I'm not going to say he's blameless. He's not. I would not like some man's sweat from the crotchal region rubbed in my face. But I also wouldn't be double birding and using profanity. And if you combine alcohol with, I don't know how expensive those tickets are, but probably a fair amount of money for that league to sit front row. So the guy's probably entitled to a certain extent. A lot of people in those kind of leagues, like I've said, I've talked to players, profanity is not uncommon. Racism in those comments is not uncommon. Mentally abused is not uncommon. So that's kind of, you combine all those different things and then you have the short fuse of DeMarcus Cousins and you have what you have. So if I'm DeMarcus Cousins, I think he's less blameless than what I've heard this guy was saying, and then he's got the double bird going on. So there's that side of it, and then here's the other side of it. DeMarcus Cousins wasn't done, because as you're going through the tunnel there, he's getting more of it.
Ahí lo ve, dejándose sentir ante el público, y eso no va a quedar bien. Ahí esto se acaba. Esto pasó a mayores, desafortunado.
So I don't know, what is DeMarcus Cousins, 6'11", maybe 280 pounds, so it took like six guys. What that really reminded me of, and one of the reasons I wanted to play it, was I was at, and I've told you this before, I was at the Malice in the Palace. I was working in Detroit, I was doing a morning show, and it was a Friday night, so I was covering the Pistons and the Pacers, and I've said this, but I'll tell you again, if you're new, there's a bench for either team at the Palace, and then behind that is a media area, and there's cement basically behind you, like a cement barrier, but it's not very tall. You can easily get over it. And then there's a bunch of chairs sitting right there, folding chairs. And I was sitting in one of those folding chairs, and I'm not saying it was right by me, but it was probably 25, 30 feet away from me, the whole melee, because it was on the, let me fix my screen there. It was on the scorer's table. So it was probably, I don't know, 25, 30 feet away from me. So when I start seeing this, and, you know, Ron Artest back in the day, again, was kind of like DeMarcus Cousins, and he got into it with Ben Wallace, and all hell breaks loose. And so I'm sitting there for a while I stand up for a while. And then, of course, it being Detroit, it's drunk, it's late in the game. It was big-time rival back, you know, Pacers and Pistons were big-time rival in the Eastern Conference. Fans in Detroit, of course, start coming down, which is the opposite of what you want them to do, and just all hell broke loose. And so then what I did was I was on the side of one of the tunnels, just like where DeMarcus Cousins was just going, and I start kind of going towards there, like I still want to see what's going on. And this is before, like, you know, cell phones were all that prevalent. So I'm just kind of standing there just looking at the, looking at what's going on here. And then all of a sudden, Pacers players are running towards those tunnels and popcorn, beers, like all of a sudden I'm like avoiding this kind of stuff. And then I kind of take a, you know, a turn around and I just go through that thing. Like, I'm getting out of here, man. This thing was crazy. But yeah, so that's what it reminded me of, is just stuff flying down. But again, that's not prevalent. That kind of stuff doesn't happen a whole lot in the NBA. There's better security than that. But clearly in this kind of a situation, so security doesn't get over there to break up the thing between he and the fan. And then he's trying to get off the floor. And then obviously things are flying there. And then he does the wrong thing, in which is, okay, I'm going to try to fight the whole, you know, fandom and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, just a crazy, crazy thing with DeMarcus Cousins, the fans, and then him trying to get off the, or trying to get off the court, but then fighting back because he's getting hit with stuff. And I'm sure, again, profanity, racism, all those kind of things are being hurled down upon him, and he's just losing his mind. So anyway, there's one part of the Sweet Clean family-friendly Caboose Pistol. There's that. And then, so I was watching, this is kind of funny. So I'm watching this video, right, of Cousins to grab for the show. And you know how this works. They want to keep you for 10 minutes unwittingly knowing that, like, you're watching video after video after video. And then after about like 10 minutes, you're like, what am I doing with my life? Like, why am I watching these videos? Cause they come right after one, after the other, after the other. So anyway, this is what happened. So the video that was after the DeMarcus Cousins video, and this may be old, it may be new, I don't know. It just popped up right after DeMarcus Cousins, but I think it's hilarious. So here's a guy and he's in court, and he's in felony court. All right. He's in felony court wearing this shirt. Now, again, you would think if you were in felony court, this has nothing to do with DeMarcus Cousins. It was just the video that popped up next. So you would think if you're in felony court, I don't know, I've never been in felony court, but I'm just spitballing here, that you might want to put on a suit. You might want to put on a tie. You might want to look nice. If you don't put on a tie, maybe a nice clean shirt would be nice. Maybe a button-up shirt. Look as good as you possibly can. Try to curry favor with the judge or whatever. But that's not what this guy does in felony court.
That was a good shirt to wear to court this morning. That's all you could find. That's all, the only shirt you had in your closet. World's best farter. That's great. No, it says, I can read it. I see what it says at the bottom. You're in felony court. You need to dress appropriately to felony court, and that's not appropriate.
So let me go back just so you can see it. So it says world's best farter. And then in small print there, maybe you can see it. Maybe you can't. It says, I mean, father. So he thought that in going into felony court with the t-shirt that said world's best farter, and then in small print, I mean, father, was going to be something that would be nice. And so the judge was like, no, I'm not down with world's best farter as the shirt that you're going to wear to felony court today. As you can see right there, to felony court. And she's none too happy about it. Judges, I don't know. I've been in front of a judge before. I know that's hard to believe. I have been in front of a judge before. And this is just personal experience. I could be 100% wrong. They don't generally have a great sense of humor. They're very serious. Why so serious? I mean, they're serious people. And they don't like to mess around. And it's their court. I mean, they'll tell you numerous times, this is my courtroom, you know. And so if you walk into her courtroom with world's best farter when it's a felony, you know, you kind of should be taken seriously, right? I mean, it's a felony. I don't know what it was. But anyway, if you have more information on it. But yeah, if you were crime pays, that would probably be not as good. But world's best farter basically means that I'm making fun of you and I don't really respect what you're going to do to me, which again, this is just off the top of my head. As most judges, they look at it as a challenge. Like, oh, okay. If that was felony court, you know, and I could have given you 6 months, I'm giving you a year. Like, that's what they do. Like, they're not, like I said, they're not joking. They're not kidding around. So anyway, world's best farter. And just, you know, if you learn something, anything from the show, I don't know, if you're ever in felony court, maybe not world's best farter. Just saying. So anyway, there you go. All right. Anything else? Hi, Humboldt Fats. Haven't seen you in a while. Very nice to see everybody today. If I did not hit you up today, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for hanging out with the show today. I do believe that is what I've got for you. Let me just double check. Yep. We got the things on that. Yep. We got Steve Young in there. So lucky seven in a row as we hit the chalkboard one last time, seven in a row for the Giants. Adames bit another home run. I know it's Colorado, but we got another game today at noon. Can he do it again? Schmidt, Yaz, all getting it done. Giants fans mean. That's what Mookie Betts thinks. That's what Jackson Merrill thinks. He thinks we're on the par with New York and the Yankees. I find that hard to believe. Steve Young speaks. He likes the offseason of the 49ers. Robert Saleh, we replaced that with Bryce Huff. I'll have Saleh a little bit later for you. Debo looks big to me, but we'll see. I could be wrong. NBA Finals, I was wrong about that. The Caboose, Cousins, you just saw, and I just put Court Guy, world's best farter, Court Guy. So that's what we got as far as the sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose pistol is concerned. I am going to text Larry Kruger right now, and we'll make sure that we get part of the pint going for tomorrow night. You cannot miss that. That is Logan Webb. Webb v. Yamamoto tomorrow night. And if the Giants can get a win tonight, then they would, at worst, just have 28 losses, and they might even be tied for first place with the Dodgers going into that. But even if not, they're certainly going to be in good shape for that Dodgers series. So there you go. And that is episode 163. Made sure that we hit up our supers today. Thanks to Fuji for another super. You are the man. Much appreciated. Remember, you don't have to be watching the show live. Just hit me up with comments right underneath the show right there. If you got other comments that you're thinking of, hit me up at John Lund Radio on X. I'm always there. Want to say hello to all the people watching today on Instagram. Good morning, good morning, good morning to you as well. Want to make sure we say hello to everybody on Instagram. Thanks for watching there. Maybe you're watching on Facebook. That's John Lund, my personal page. We can be friends. And then John Lund Unleashed as well. People watching on LinkedIn or any other way that you're watching. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. But still try to come on over to John Lund Unleashed. Give us a subscribe to the channel. Make sure that you give us a like before you get out of here today as well. And keep those alerts on specifically today, because I'll get some Robert Saleh stuff out to you. And when news breaks, we'll have that too. Plus Giants are playing today. So I may have some opinion on based on what we see today around noon when they get going in Colorado. So make sure you stay tuned for that, because if we get another win, 8 in a row, that'd be great. We can talk more about it and then start previewing the Dodgers series, which we'll do tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific on John Lund Unleashed. All right, everybody have a tremendous... Oh, there you go. People do... See, I'm a big Bryan Cranston fan. Sorry, I just was going to sign off, and then Joe G said something about Bryan Cranston. PMP today at 11, right? Where is it? There it is. Big Bryan Cranston fan. Huge Bryan Cranston fan. He's hilarious and a great actor at the same time. All right, there it is. Episode 163. Everybody have a great Thursday. Keep those alerts on, because we'll have more stuff for you later on in the day. Make sure you check out the Bay Area Sports Collective as well, and have a wonderful Thursday. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!